You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Right, I thought we might let that play out a bit more, seeing as we're sort of under-planned for today.
Nah, let's go, Ben.
This day in history takes us back to 1973 and the final withdrawal of United States combat troops from Vietnam. So this is sort of the third part in a trilogy I've done on Vietnam, as loyal listeners I'm sure will know. Direct American involvement in the war had begun in 1965 and had become increasingly controversial. Lachlan.
Defense Secretary Robert McNamara holds a dramatic press conference only a few hours after the first U.S. bombings of oil dumps outside the North Vietnamese cities of Hanoi and Haiphong. The attack was a 46-plane airstrike, with both Air Force and Navy jet bombers participating. According to estimates, the raid cost North Vietnam about 40% of its gas and oil reserves. Secretary McNamara stressed the fact that only military targets were hit by the bombers. 750-pound bombs like these are loaded on Air Force 105s. Hanoi claimed 7 planes down during the raid, but only one Thunder Chief jet was lost. Intelligence reports show that Haiphong handled about 95% of all North Vietnamese petroleum imports, while Hanoi was the key distribution point. The raids represented an escalation in the air war and were the closest ever to Haiphong and Hanoi. The bombing raid was kicked off by 4 flights of Navy jets, which streaked from the carrier Ranger here and the Constellation. Navy pilots reported only feeble anti-aircraft fire, and they estimated that 80% of the target was destroyed. Their on-target bombing penetration took only 8 minutes. Anti-war demonstrators protest U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War in mass marches, rallies, and demonstrations. Central Park is the starting point for the parade to the UN building. The estimated 125,000 Manhattan marchers include students, housewives, beatnik poets, doctors, businessmen, teachers, priests, and nuns. Makeup and costumes were bizarre. Before the parade, mass draft card burning was urged. Demonstrators claimed 200 cards were burned, but no accurate count could be determined. Reporters and onlookers were jostled away on purpose. Although mostly peaceful, shouted confrontations were frequent and fiery during the course of the march. The anti-war marchers were picketed by anti-anti-war marchers who were hawkish toward the parading doves. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King leads the procession to the United Nations, where he urges UN pressure to force the U.S. to stop bombing North Vietnam. Police arrested 5 persons as disorderly. 3 were grabbed when they rushed the parade float. No serious injuries, however, in New York's biggest anti-war march. A companion peace demonstration brings out 50,000 marchers in downtown San Francisco. They parade 2 miles along Market Street, pacifists and hippies together. Gigantic Kesar Stadium holds the mass rally, where anti-war songs and speeches trigger a short scuffle between pro and con factions. No one was injured. Both demonstrations were sponsored by a loose coalition of left-wing, pacifist, and moderate anti-war groups. President Johnson, meanwhile, let it be known that the FBI is closely watching all anti-war activity.
During the war, the Department of Defense had maintained that South Vietnam was winning and that American involvement would soon be wound down. This position became hard to defend, however, after a surprise Viet Cong offensive during the Tet Festival, which swept into various southern cities in 1968.
Hi, this is Johnny Carson. As you know, this is usual starting time for the Tonight Show, but because of the critical war situation in Vietnam, especially around Saigon, NBC for the next 15 minutes is going to bring you a special news program via satellite. So stay with us. We'll return in 15 minutes with our guest, Mr. Garrison.
NBC News presents Viet Cong Terror. Here is NBC News correspondent Frank McGee.
The new communist campaign in Vietnam continues.
Just after midnight their time, a band of Viet Cong raiders blew up a power installation and attacked two police stations in Saigon. Other small bands still roam the city. The Viet Cong are reported to be in complete control of a militant Buddhist headquarters less than a mile from the center of town. And there are reports that the National Liberation Front has formed a revolutionary council to run Saigon. At nearby Tonsonut Air Force Base, which is also American military headquarters, sporadic sniper fire continues to be heard. At Hue, the old imperial capital, 400 miles to the north, the Viet Cong is holding on to part of the town, as well as half the city of Con Tum in the central highlands. Along the northern coastline, Nha Trang and Quy Nhon have come under fresh mortar fire. And earlier today, South Vietnamese President Thieu declared martial law. It all amounts to the most ambitious series of communist attacks yet mounted, spreading violence into at least 10 provincial capitals, plus American air bases and civilian installations stretching the entire length of the country. None had greater psychological impact than the assault on the American embassy in Saigon.
Even the American military must grudgingly admire what the Viet Cong were able to do and what they achieved. The perfectly timed attacks are going to be remembered a lot longer than the less dramatic but hard-fought American victories of late. Pentagon officials believe the Viet Cong paid dearly for their acts of rampant terrorism, but surely the communist leaders must feel they were worth it. They do not appear to be final acts of desperation. Remember, too, not a single North Vietnamese regular was involved. Hanoi's troops are, however, poised near Khe Sanh, and that battle, which could be decisive, has yet to be fought. The U.S. military may now have to rethink basic tactical and strategic concepts in Vietnam. Troops may have to be redeployed. The Americans are painfully weak in many important areas, particularly in the Central Highlands. The communists may not be winning the war, as the Pentagon claims, but they don't seem to be losing it either.
That was part one of This Day in History. Part two will continue after the break.
Service broadcasting.
95 BFM presents.
Okay, retro. Go.
Public.
Go.
Service.
Go.
Broadcasting.
Go. Telcom. Go.
The power
yes,
station.
Go. Econ. Go. Surgeon. Go.
Thursday, retro. May 3rd.
Go.
Ticket
Final.
Master.
Go. Guidance.
Go.
Patrol.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go. Power station.
Go.
Goddamn poo, you just crashed into my Mazda Demio!
I crashed into you, you crashed into me!
No, you merged incorrectly, merged like a zipper, Z-I-P-P-A!
I was merging like a zipper!
Not like any zip I've ever seen!
What kind of zip goes 232?
What kind of zips we have in Kohimarama? What are you doing? Don't know the road!
Do all your clothes fall apart?
What are you listening to?
I'm listening to BFM Drive.
Oh my god, I'm listening to BFM Drive.
Shut up.
No, I won't shut up. I love it so much.
Shut
I like talking
up.
About it. It's
I
my
love
favorite
it.
Radio station
it's
thing.
It's my favorite too. Hey.
What are you doing?
Should we get married?
Oh my god, why are you down on one knee?
Will you marry me?
Of course I will. Oh my god, this is the best day of my life.
I'm so happy. Oh my god, I have to call my mum.
Yeah, what's her name?
Tammy.
Cute. Should we take your car or mine?
I don't know if either of them will drive.
Taxi.
Let's get an Uber.
You got Taxi. Nice.
Good shit happens when you let BFM drive into your precious automobile. Every weekday from 4 till 7, Johnny and Big Hungry sweeten the blow of your homeward commute with all the good features and all the good tunes to keep you ticking along. BFM Drive with Johnny and Big Hungry, every weekday from 4 till 7.
We now return to This Day in History. When we left off, America was still involved in the Vietnam War and would try to wind down its involvement in the conflict, which officially ended in 1973, according to terms negotiated at the Paris Peace Accords.
The day began here in Paris, cold, wet, and gloomy. Around the now famous Majestic Hotel, an impressive security force. It was here that for almost 5 years, there were negotiations that seemed frustrating and never got anywhere. Now it's the site where the signing ceremonies took place. There were actually two separate ceremonies. The first was this morning, among the four foreign ministers, in a ceremony that was designed to get the two forces in South Vietnam to accept the ceasefire without having to accept each other.
On this day in history, March the 29th, 1973, President Richard Nixon made an address to the nation to announce that the last combat soldier had left Vietnam.
4 years and 2 months ago, when I first came into this office as president, by far the most difficult problem confronting the nation was the seemingly endless war in Vietnam. 550,000 Americans were in Vietnam. As many as 300 a week were being killed in action. Hundreds were held as prisoners of war in North Vietnam, and no progress was being made at the peace negotiations. I immediately initiated a program to end the war and win an honorable peace. 11 times over the past 4 years, I have reported to the nation from this room on the progress we have made toward that goal. And tonight, the day we have all worked and prayed for has finally come. For the first time in 12 years, no American military forces are in Vietnam. All of our American POWs are on their way home. The 17 million people of South Vietnam have the right to choose their own government without outside interference. And because of our program of Vietnamization, they have the strength to defend that right. We have prevented the imposition of a communist government by force on South Vietnam. There are still some problem areas. The provisions of the agreement requiring an accounting for all missing in action in Indochina. The provisions with regard to Laos and Cambodia. The provisions prohibiting infiltration from North Vietnam into South Vietnam have not been complied with. We have and will continue to comply with the agreement. We shall insist that North Vietnam comply with the agreement. And the leaders of North Vietnam should have no doubt as to the consequences if they fail to comply with the agreement.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.